Thank you, Pastor Jonathan. You may not know, my name's Christina. Hello. Hi. I'm a little nervous. I don't usually get nervous. It's probably because I'm talking about my testimony today. So, Pastor Jonathan, when I told him I was telling him, sharing my testimony with you, he said, well, that should be easy. You know, you shouldn't forget your testimony. But on the contrary, our testimony is all the things that we reflect on that God has done in our lives. But sometimes, on a daily basis, there are things that we just forget that God does. And when you sit down and take the time to really reflect and pray about all the things that God has done in your life and is going to do, it's mind-blowing. It's something that we can't even fathom. I don't even know why I'm currently standing here, to be honest. I don't even know where I would be without God. And so, as I start to, you know, really share my testimony today, I want to first start off with a story, and I might pace because I usually don't use this. A few years ago, I was actually getting on a plane, and earlier that day when I got onto the plane, I had been thrown under a bus, not literally thrown under the bus, but professionally thrown under the bus by a woman who was also not necessarily a colleague of mine, but worked in the same sphere. And, you know, as a female, and I'm a financial planner, and it's a very white-collared, male-dominated world, basically she threw me under the bus. And for me, you know, I don't, you know, my feelings get hurt pretty easily when somebody talks bad about me. And that entire day, why'd she say that about me? I didn't even do anything to her. She's not even my client, whatever it may be. I got onto a plane earlier or later that day, and I probably visibly had tears in my eyes. And that entire time I was sitting there praying to God, like, God, please, like, make me stop crying. Don't let me be angry. You know, just saying whatever I can so I don't put on a nasty Facebook status saying, you know, screw these people. I quit. Okay? But I didn't do that because the person who actually sat next to me started to talk to me. And little did I know, as we started to talk, this guy, I guess, kind of felt that I was being sad or something like that, pulled out his phone, and he was like, hey, look at this cool picture I just took. I was like, oh, this is cool. Nice. Okay. Going back into my prayer or, like, being not nice. And he just kept talking to me. And this guy, he ended up sharing his testimony with me. He basically was a Hollywood producer, director, used to produce films like Gia, like worked on Baywatch, you know, Dr. Quinn, Medicine Woman. Crazy, crazy guy. And he basically, you know, was telling me his testimony and how he was in, like, the Hollywood scene that wasn't the Christ part of it. And then he finally shared with me that now, after a few years, he got out of that scene and now is producing Christian films. The guy I met on this plane, he and I ended up being, you know, Facebook friends for the past couple years. And now he's producing Christian films. And basically, I don't know why God introduced me to this, but I believe that in the future that something's going to come out of it. But regardless, his testimony was basically about how God redeemed him. He pulled out a white stone out of his pocket and said, you know, Christina, God put this white stone in front of me, and it says in Revelations that those, that every person who has a white stone, they'll be given a new name, and that God is your redeemer. And so it doesn't matter what that lady said about you. It doesn't matter, you know, what she did or what you didn't do. God is still your redeemer. And so with that, I honestly don't know why God is having me share my testimony today, but I pray that wherever you are today, wherever you, why you came here, wherever you are, whatever you're doing, I pray that at least some part of my testimony touches you today. So if you can just pray with me. God, thank you for giving me the privilege to stand here today before you and be used by you, God. I thank you for what you've done in our lives, what you're going to do in our lives, and for this current moment in time to be able to reveal your love to more and more people. God, please get me out of the way and let your word and your glory be reflected in this. Amen. I think it should help to give you guys a little bit of background about, you know, kind of how I was raised. So I was actually raised as Catholic. So basically, as many people know, you know, Catholics, we pray to the Virgin Mary, you know, we believe in the rosary. In my family, like when I was younger, basically they'd have like Santo Niño parties. Does anybody know what a Santo Niño is? Yeah, so basically it's a statue of baby Jesus. And they would bring in baby Jesus into our house and they would give it crackers, light candles, and pray to it. Okay. It was an interesting experience, but that's basically kind of how I grew up in a Catholic family. You know, services, if you go to Catholic Mass, are 1 hour. You know that if you're raising your hands like this, service is almost done. Okay. Offerings pass by, you know service is almost done. Pretty much, you know, that was kind of my background. Now, growing up, I never got confirmed, so I always thought, like, man, I'm not the proper Catholic girl. I never got to do communion, you know, or anything like that, so I wasn't raised, like, in the traditional Catholic lens. Part of it was because when I was 4, my mother was actually diagnosed with breast cancer. You know, at the time, it was, yeah, so me and my brother and my mom living in Los Angeles, California. My father had not been in the picture because he was actually living in the Philippines and my parents had divorced early on. However, when my mother got diagnosed with cancer, my father ended up coming to live with us for a few years to help take care of us. Unfortunately, in the initial stages of my mother's illness, as a 4, 5, 6-year-old person, I saw a lot of things that a kid shouldn't have to see. You know, I remember one time my mom brought me into the bathroom and basically showed me her mastectomy. I mean, that's traumatizing for a 5-year-old kid. You know, we lived in a 1-bedroom apartment, kitchen was there, living room was there, you know, my brother was or sleeping on the couch, my mother, dad and my mom and I shared the 1-bedroom. And I could hear, like, in the kitchen, my mom, you know, vomiting because of the chemotherapy. And so a lot of this stuff, you know, kids shouldn't have had to see. But I did. Saw my mom lose her hair. I saw, you know, her get dressed every day, you know, get up, go to work. After she, you know, had been through chemo for a few years, she ended up, you know, being ready to go to work. So she worked for a few years. And at some point, which I don't really know, my father left. I don't remember saying goodbye. I don't remember saying see you later, but he ended up leaving. After a few years, maybe 7, 8, 9 years old, basically me, my mom, and my brother. And at the time, a few years later, my mother actually passed away when I was 11 years old. Now, my brother is actually 10 years older than I am. Basically, my brother at the time when my mom was 22 years old. When my mother passed away, my father essentially called and said, "Hey, Christine, I'm sorry I heard your mom passed away." And that was the last time I talked to him, was when I was 11. My father ended up passing away when I was 17, the night that I got back from my senior high school prom. And that was the last time I talked to him was when I was 11. So as you can imagine, just part of my background, a kid who saw all these things, didn't have a dad, I struggled a lot as I grew up with abandonment issues, trust issues, things that a person should expect to have in their life, I didn't have. I didn't have a father to run to. I didn't have a mother to run to. At the time, as I was growing up, I thought, if God loved me, why would this happen? Why would he let this happen to me? Why would he let this happen to my parents? Why would he let this happen to my brother? I didn't know for a while. Technically, I still don't really know why, right? But what I do know is that God still ordains our steps. God still puts in place all the things that he's planned for our lives. My brother ended up deciding to move us to Texas when I was 11. The main reason he did that was because My mother's best friend lived in Texas. One of her dying wishes was actually to say, guys, if I pass, please protect Christina from her father. Apparently, my father was a really abusive person. And so they didn't want to have me go live with him in the Philippines and be raised by him. That was one of the reasons we ended up moving to Texas. And I joke around a lot with my brother and my family around this, because, and like friends, because I can't imagine being an 11-year-old kid in Los Angeles, California. We didn't live in like the greatest area. It wasn't Beverly Hills. It was Hawthorne, California. And I think to myself, man, I could have been pregnant with two kids. I could have been in a gang. We were living there during the LA riots in 1992, actually. Crazy time in like Los Angeles history. At hindsight, I think, okay, you know, God had to still have had his hand on me throughout all this time. After my brother moved us to Texas, you know, I ended up getting to play basketball. I played basketball in middle school, high school, and I ended up getting a scholarship to go play in college. Throughout that entire time, I was actually pretty homophobic. I remember myself saying in high school, like, man, I hope that girl doesn't touch me. Like, she's gay. And this was Texas. I kind of grew up homophobic, not because somebody told me, you know, it was wrong. I actually grew up in a pretty open family. There's like 7 or 8 gay people in my family. I mean, when I came out, my aunt was like, you're gay? Why didn't you tell me sooner? Here are all the people in your family who are gay. And so what you can imagine is that this is like this homophobic thing, I think, is really just, again, society. People just imposing their own beliefs on other people. And then I ended up going to Oberlin College. If anybody has heard of Oberlin College, it's probably, yeah, Cleveland. It's probably most liberal private college in the country, or one of the most. One of the top 5 most liberal colleges in the country. And little did I know that, because all I wanted to do was play basketball. Still in this kind of thought process of, one, I'm homophobic. 2, I want to get away from Houston. I want to get away from my brother. I want to get away from all these things because I want to start my own life. That's actually where I found God. I actually got saved my freshman year of college. You know, even though, like, throughout my middle school, high school years, I thought, you know, God didn't love me, or I thought that God wasn't there. For some reason, he brought me to Oberlin. And if you've never been to Oberlin, it's like 30 minutes west of Cleveland, Ohio, in the cornfields. Like, literally, there's 3,000 people. Like, I don't even know how I survived there, because I'm a city girl, but through and through. I thought to myself, when I got to Oberlin, I was like, God, why do you have me here? This is cornfields. They're growing their own, like, tomatoes down the road or something like that. They've got their own happy cattle. Okay. I also ended up getting saved through a non-denominational church. This is a non-denominational church that I actually went through all through college. So basically hands raising, like speaking in tongues, spirit-filled worship services, prophecy, all that happening in Oberlin. And I had no idea this even existed because, again, I grew up Catholic. And by the way, like when my mom was still alive, she was Catholic as well, but she also kind of was into like talisms. She would bring like little elephants and like little trolls. You guys remember those different colored hair trolls? To all her like little, you know, like bingo things as good luck. And I was like, man, if I don't have to worship an elephant or rub a troll's hair, like why not give this Jesus person a chance, right? I also had a conversation with a good friend of mine who recently just got accepted Jesus, and her name's Kathy. You might know her. She goes to Buckhead Church. And Kathy described the relationship with Jesus like this. If we can have a relationship with a person where we try to leave, we can make mistakes, believe he doesn't exist, call him names, but can run back to him anytime, and he still love us, why not? Why not? It made sense because that was my relationship with God throughout college. You know, I was pretty popular. I mean, I had friends. I played basketball. I technically still hold like 6 college records, you know, for basketball. You can check me out. Look in our record books. I basically struggled with my self-worth because I was actually that girl. So what I mean by that is, as being that girl, for 4 years, dated, I was in a relationship with a guy. Yes, I did date boys before. And he cheated on me every single year. And I stayed in that relationship because I didn't know my self-worth. It got to a point where we were in an abusive relationship, where junior, senior year of college, we were throwing fists, like probably earlier that, actually sophomore, junior year of college, throwing punches at each other. I've been slapped. I've been thrown. Bruises would show up. But yet, I still stayed in that relationship. And I don't know about you guys, sometimes we stay in relationships much longer than we have to or than we really need to or longer than God tells us to. And I kept staying because I didn't think I was worth it. During that time, I actually tried to commit suicide 2 times in college. It was after the second time where I knew God still had his hand on me, still had a call on my life, where he wanted to say, Christine, I am still here. Even though you don't think I'm here, I am still standing with you. No matter what you call me, no matter where you think I am, I'm still walking with you. And so after that second time, I, you know, decided to go full out into church. Mind you, this is a non-denominational straight church. Even though we were a liberal college, this church had conservative kind of backings. All of my senior year, I basically went to church. For a college senior, that's kind of tough, right? You know, we're being pulled all these different ways. And right after college, you know, we had to make that decision of, Christine, what are you going to do? Where are you going to go? And I actually, surprisingly, decided to stay in Cleveland for a couple years. Cleveland, Ohio, guys. I'm from Los Angeles. Went to high school in Texas. You know, big city girl. Living in Cleveland, Ohio, where it snows, you know, starting in November. I'm used to the sunshine, the warmth, the beach, and I decided to purposefully live in Cleveland to follow what God wanted me to do. I didn't know what God wanted me to do, but I knew he wanted me there. I stayed after college to basically go through their leadership program. Started to learn more in-depth details about the Bible. Was taught, you know, just different techniques on how to preach and stuff like that. You know, all the things that you're supposed to learn in leadership development, right? I dated my first woman, right? And I'm like, really, God? Mind you, Oberlin's so liberal that there were so many gay girls and women there that I could have probably experienced this during college. But I was like, why now? Why after college? But it's because God was still working on me. I still didn't understand my net worth. I was still trying to understand what I was, who I was in God's eyes. And by the way, I also, as I'm talking about who you are to God and who God is to you, I would suggest Googling just literally the words, if you ever struggle with this, who am I to God? Literally, if you go to do a Google search, there comes up all of these links and all of these Bible verses that actually talk about who you are to God. So if you ever struggle with what God really says about you, we Google definitions, we Google math problems, whatever it may be. Google, who are you to God? Who am I to God? Anyway, I stayed in Cleveland, and I basically ended up like dating my first woman after college. And obviously, that was a no-no in my church. That relationship lasted for a year until I finally came out to my pastors at that time. For many of us who struggled with that while we were attending a straight church, it wasn't easy. Like, I stopped going to church events because I didn't want to be seen with my friend. I basically had that person, if friends were coming over and their car was, like, hide in their car. Like, it was crazy stuff that I had that other person, that I put this other person through to not be seen. So I couldn't do it anymore. I basically finally came out to my pastors. They proceeded to tell me that I needed to choose. They actually asked me to step out of leadership, probably much like most people who've served in leadership churches at straight churches. That was a blow to me. You know, I decided to pretty much stop life and live in this city that I really didn't like anyway, to serve God. But they asked me to step down because I needed to choose and that I couldn't live in this lifestyle. And as much as I tried to tell them that I couldn't help this feeling, I mean, hindsight's always 20/20, right? Where I was in kindergarten and I asked a girl if she wanted to kiss. I think I was gay. I played basketball since I was like 5. And my family apparently knew I was gay. My pastors at the time asked me to step down, and when I said, okay, yeah, I'll step down, and they asked me to start counseling sessions. Now, we all know how these counseling sessions end up. They clearly didn't work. They're like, well, you've got to just choose. Well, if I could choose, I wouldn't choose this feeling. And so that was around 2007. At that time, 2007 came around, I was like, God, you've got to get me out of here. You've got to open a door. Somehow, I can't live in Cleveland. I can't keep going to this church. I can't even be with this person I'm with right now. You've just got to get me out of here. What's interesting is God truly does hear our prayers, because I yelled. I was like, God, please do something. So I got promoted at my job, had the opportunity to move down to Atlanta, and all of that happened within like basically a 45 to 60 day process. So that happened April of 2007. I moved down like end of April. I moved down June 4th, 2007, because God knew what he was doing. And so June 2007 was happening, and I still had this feeling, okay, I moved down to Atlanta, I don't know anybody, I'm not going to try to date anybody while I'm down here. But June 4th, 2007, if anybody goes back into Atlanta's festival calendar, I had just moved here, didn't even know anybody. I think it was like 2 weeks later, a big festival in June still happened, which was called Pride. My company was sponsoring a table at that event. And they were like, Christina, I know you're new here, but we're sponsoring this thing called Pride. Do you want to lead your group to go do it? I'm like, oh my God. Gay people? There's more gay people? I had never heard about Pride, by the way. So my first time in Atlanta Pride was June 2007, and boy, I've never seen so many stars. I think that was confirmation saying, or God saying, you're okay, you're allowed to be in Atlanta. Basically, when I moved down here, I strayed away from church because I just didn't know where else to go. I didn't know that there were gay churches that existed. That there were gay-affirming churches, you know, in the city. The first year that I lived in Atlanta, I tried to date guys again, which that didn't work. And I said, okay, well, let me start dating women again. And at the time, you know, basically for the first year, I was crazy. I pretty much was out and about. I was in the scene, hanging out in the bars. And nothing, by the way, there's nothing wrong with bars or clubs or anything like that. It's just like what you do and your actions, I think, when you're there. But I was just out there just being crazy. And so finally, same deal. A year later, something hit me. And maybe it was God slapping me in the face. And yet again, Even though I wasn't worshiping, I wasn't consistently going to church, I still yelled out to God. And I said, God, I can't do this again. I can't do this anymore. Please, please show me a sign that you are still here, that you still exist. I need you. And I remember this distinctly because I was actually at work and I was out in the parking lot and I had just gotten off the phone with a friend. And I hung up the phone in front and I started yelling this. And it was like 7 o'clock at night in the middle of the parking lot. I'm the only person in this parking lot. God, help me. And God still answered my prayers. A week later, I actually ended up going to MSR. And that's actually where I met Jill. Hey, Jill. Jill was actually attending TGPA. And so Jill was like, hey, you know, that's cool. Do you want to go to church, you know, with me? Me and my friends are going to church to this place called TGPA next week. Do you want to come? And I was like, oh, yeah, sure, I'll go to church with you. This is great. I had no idea what to expect. As many of you guys probably don't know what to expect when you walk into TGPA when you initially got here. But we were like in the old building off of Piedmont, where it was like probably this big. We were close, right? This is Pastor Keith, and this was like our back row right here. Again, this was like 2008 at the time. And I walked in, immediately felt the love of God. I knew that the Spirit of God was there. The worship was amazing. I got into it. I lifted my hands because I was like, oh my God, God does exist. These are gay people around me. Like, you exist, God, and there's gay people. And I knew that God had brought me to this family for a reason. That was in 2008, and basically, you know, I've been attending TGPA for over 7 years now. Personally, I've watched people come and go. Sat on our leadership team, and there have been times where I've served, there have been times that I've been put on the shelf. And by the way, if you have been called to serve and you feel like you're on the shelf for a period of time and not being used, sometimes that's actually okay. God's trying to do something with you, or he's wanting to use you for a different purpose. And there's this really awesome sermon that Pastor Keith does called The Potter's Hand. He talks about how God continues to mold us and that once he's done creating this pot of clay, you get put on the shelf. Past 7 years, I've served, I've led, I've taught home group, and there have been times where I had to sit on the shelf. But what I do know is that God was there throughout all of those times, throughout the past. I'm turning 32 next week, so 32 years. But I also know in the past 10 years since I found God that I've also have made mistakes. Within the last 7 years, I also tried to commit suicide one more time because, again, I still didn't understand my worth. We talk about this, and we see this on Facebook, or we see it in the news a lot. Like, and I'll just put this out there. Mental illness is real. Depression is real. And throughout that entire time, I actually stayed in prayer because Pastor Keith knew I was dealing with depression, and he knew I was dealing with abandonment issues, and I was dealing with all this hate, all this anger. God, why did you do this? All these things about why do people leave me? My pastors prayed for me. But I will also put it out there that sometimes you actually do need professional help. And I don't know why I'm saying this, but it's whoever it's for, is that Pastor Keith, leaders, the pastors at the time, they prayed for me, but they also referred me to a professional. So I actually saw a therapist, like a professional therapist, and came to church, got on my knees, prayed for deliverance, all at the same time. You know, this happened for probably 3-4 years where I was constantly getting professional help but also attending church. because mental illness is real. So if you think you have to do it alone or you think you have to just do it through church, I don't think that's necessarily true. I think that you can also get professional help as well. Part of it is also, you know, understanding while you're getting this help, while you're making yourself whole, like while you are understanding how God loves you, because he has that agape love, that unconditional love for you. Most of the time we're so introverted, or, you know, we think about it and hold on to it ourselves. I can tell you the best way to really stop thinking about all of your problems, all of the things that are going wrong in your life, is to really serve. So whether it's helping teach a home group, whether it's praying for a person, whether it's going to Bible study, you know, picking up somebody for a ride or whatever it may be, is serve God. Part of how I also got to a point where I am now is that even though I haven't been able to completely be obedient to God, God still had a call on my life. And even now, we are actually working on a separate missions organization that many of you guys know that I've been working on for the past, you know, few years. It's called Agape Impact. And it's so amazing that Pastor Deb started singing Spanish today, because some of the places that we're looking to go, where God has brought me and what he's had a call on my life, is really, you know, giving me the love for missions and people, is, you know, I'm going to be working on this missions organization. It's tailored to do two things. One, minister to LGBT people in other countries. But also another aspect is, if you are LGBT and you feel that you've been called to missions, it's a place for you as well. Be on the lookout for that. We're going to start working on that. That's been on my heart for a long time now. I think that's it. So,
thank you, Christine. I appreciate that very much. You know, testimonies are powerful, and it's what God has done in your life. And when people start seeing the change that he's made and seeing the fruits of the Spirit growing in your own life and how God starts to use you, that's when people really start to take notice. And I think that's when lives are changed. So thank you very much. The Bible says that we will overcome by the blood of the Lamb and the power of our testimony. And our testimonies are powerful in that way. So thank you.